From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Scott Howell has done this before, challenged the powerful and popular Orrin Hatch. The former state lawmaker and businessman ran against Hatch in 2000. At the time, he mentioned the senior senator had been in Washington too long, that it was time for new blood, new ideas. It's been 12 years, and while the issues are different, the landscape hasn't changed all that much in the state. Howell has his work cut out for him if he's going to topple one of the most enduring political figures in the country. Today in the program, we begin a series of conversations with some of the candidates running for office this year. We're broadcasting live from the Hinckley Institute of Politics at the University of Utah, and we'll get started today with Scott Howell. We'll talk about his ideas, his stand on some of the issues, and his prospects for winning as a Democrat in one of the reddest states in the country. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Scott Howell was elected a state senator as a Democrat in 1989. About a year later, his district was redrawn. As he puts it, he was gerrymandered right out of the seat. Howell faced the prospect of running against a Republican in what most people figured was a conservative district, and his opponent was a 20-year incumbent to boot. It was one of the big political stories of the year when Howell won that race, and now, 20 years later, Howell has another uphill battle he's fighting. He's taking on one of the longest-serving political figures in the country, Orrin Hatch, who's running for his seventh six-year term. Today in the program, we're back at the Hinckley Institute of Politics, the University of Utah, for the first in a series of conversations with some of the candidates running for office this year, and we're getting started with Scott Howell. We invite you to join the conversation if you have calls or comments, 801-585-WEST, our number, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We're also giving those of you here in the caucus room at the Hinckley Institute of Politics an opportunity to ask questions, which we'll get to a little bit later in the program. Scott Howell spent 34 years with IBM Corporation as a marketing and sales executive from 1990 to 2000. He served as state senator, as I mentioned, for Salt Lake's District 8 for eight of those years. He was the Senate minority leader. He served on the board of Intermountain Healthcare and was also a member of the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympic Organizing Committee. I should mention that our series, we're going to be sitting down with Senator Orrin Hatch a little bit later. We're also airing a debate between the two candidates as part of Vote Utah 2012. We'll give you the details about all of that a little bit later on the program. Scott Howell, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Doug, it's great to be back with you. It seems like old times. I use that word carefully.
Yes, good.
Old times. But it's terrific to be back home to my alma mater and It especially in this building where so much has inspired me over my life about politics and about change and about giving back. So I remember those guys on the wall, interesting enough.
He's referring to photos for those.
Yeah.
Portraits.
J.D. Williams. Yeah, portraits. R.J. Snow, Ted Wilson, and someday Kurt will be up there and doing that. And, of course, Bob Hinckley, who's at the back of the room. And this is a great place. It is a place where you see leaders of the future that will have significant impact on policy.
Well, I want to start here. Where do you figure you orient yourself on the political spectrum? I mean, do you think of yourself as a moderate? Do you think you're more progressive? I mean, I've heard you call yourself a centrist, and I'm not entirely sure what that means for you, at least.
I think of myself as normal. How about that? Just a normal Utahn, one who's lived the American dream, product of the Granite School District education system, public school system, born and raised in Utah. I was actually born in Provo, but we solved that. We, you know, my family moved at age 7, so. But my father got his PhD there from BYU, and so I think I look at my background, and I just think of myself as a Utahn trying to make sure that we do the right things for the right reasons for our citizenry.
But you've got to peg yourself somewhere on the spectrum. Center-left, center-right?
I think center-right.
Center-right.
Yeah, I would say that I'm probably in that category. But you know what's interesting, Doug? After my after serving the state legislature for 2 years, I was elected leader. And there was some real hustle about that, as you remember, because here I was, 36 years old, and now I was the leader of the Democrats, and we were 4 away from the majority back when I was in office, so it was a big deal. And I remember one time I brought my caucus in, and this is a lesson for all who are listening, especially here. And, you know, I'm the new party guy. I'm the big leader. I'm the Harry Reid or Mitch McConnell. And I said, I'm going to tell you how to vote right now. And they all kind of looked at me like, okay, what are you going to tell us? And I said, this is how you're going to vote. You're going to vote your conscience, your constituents, and the Constitution. The three C's, your conscience, your constituent, and the Constitution. When you vote that, sometimes you'll vote Republican bills, sometimes you'll vote Democrat bills, but you'll always vote the right thing. And they just sat there, and they looked at me, and they said, well, what's next? And I said, dismissed. We're done. And so I think having that philosophy of my entire life, it's a bridge-building philosophy. You know, I worked with Mike Leavitt. I worked with the Republicans. And that's what we see that's so broken in our Congress today.
You've worked with Mitt Romney. You were on the Olympic Organizing Committee, as I mentioned. You said you liked him. Are you going to vote for him for president?
You know, that's a great question because
it shouldn't be. It should be an obvious question for a Democrat.
Sure. It should be an obvious one. For me, I honestly haven't decided.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't. I think President Obama has been handed cards that are very impossible, but I really am disappointed in some of the things that I've seen coming out of the Obama administration. I'm disappointed.
Like
that,
what?
Well, one of the things is that he didn't point a U.S. Attorney that would reflect my values out here, a Democratic U.S. attorney. Other things that I'm disappointed about is the war. I wanted to be out of that war. That costs us almost $2 billion a week. And my opponent continues to vote for things that are unfunded, and that war was one of them. And that's where we see a big difference. So for me, what I tell people all the time is watch those debates carefully. Go home and ponder it and then make a decision where you're going to vote.
But some of the problems you have with the president, would they be resolved with a Republican like Mitt Romney in office?
You know, I know Mitt really well. I was on the Olympic Committee, as you know. And the Mitt Romney that I know, I think, would solve those things. But I get confused with Mitt when I hear this Iran rattling of sabers over there. It makes me very concerned. You know, we just cannot continue to not focus on America and Utah and try and be the policeman of the world. It's not working anymore.
So you're not going to say right now who you'll vote for president. Will you before you...
No, I'll say who I'll vote for president.
You will.
Yeah.
You'll make a... Make
yeah,
a call
I'll make
something.
It right now. I will vote for the right man.
That's not an answer.
Well, that's my answer.
Okay. I've often heard you say this, that Utah is not Massachusetts. You say that we have Utah values. And I wanted to get a sense of what you mean by Utah values. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think when we look at some of the moral issues that we stand differently than Massachusetts...
Like what?
I think on abortion. I think that my stance on abortion is exactly what the LDS First Presidency is. And I think on the issues of guns.
Which is what? I mean, just say exactly. You'd call yourself then pro-life.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be pro-life.
But with the exceptions of rape, incest,
well,
and the life or health of the mother.
Let me read
right?
it to you, okay?
Okay.
it is in the case of rape, incest, health and life of the mother, and extreme fetal deformities, that these are exceptions that would be acceptable. And I think what's going on with the Republican platform is they have taken the stance of no exceptions. Mitt Romney does not support the Republican platform on abortion. And so I think that that's on firearms. I think that out here in Utah, we have a different mentality on firearms. And I think that there's just a lot of issues where I really believe that we have a bigger heart than even Massachusetts. So those are some of the issues that I talk about.
Let me ask you about your position on gay rights. You believe same-sex couples have a right to get married.
I define marriage as between one man and one woman.
Okay.
I support civil unions. I also support that I'm not going to be an obstructionist as this thing is handed down. Because there are a lot of issues on this that are unresolved in my mind.
Like what? What's unresolved?
Well, I think this whole issue about how you can have one state where you legally are married and another state where you're not. And I think that just does away with the rights of individuals, same-sex partners. And I have always said from day one that we are not a society that participates in any form of... things that would cause harm for people in employment, discrimination for employment, for housing. And I think that IBM was a real prime leader in this area because we are the first company to offer same partner benefits. And I just don't support that we can discriminate people against that. But I also support that marriage is between one man and one woman. And that definition is, it comes from my religious background. And I've worked closely with Equality Utah on this. And we all agree that this definition will come to fruition in the future that might change.
What do you mean by that? This definition will come to what do you
well,
mean by that?
Well, I think the Massachusetts bill, the New York bill really identifies what's going on with this. They said that they will allow same-sex marriage, but there's a caveat that religious institutions are exempt from that, and that if either party would challenge the bill, that it could nullify the bill completely. So I think that that's a pretty good pathway that we could follow.
President Obama has said that he was evolving in his position on gay marriage, which some say was just a way of saying that he was sort of waiting for the right time politically to come out and just say he was for it. So I guess it's fair to say your position hasn't really evolved. This is a sort of a bright line for you that you just don't feel like, given your religious background and your beliefs, you can cross over.
Right.
Right. I want to ask some of these social questions, of course, are somewhat difficult if you are a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm wondering what you make of the way Mormonism is playing out in politics, particularly in the presidential race with Mitt Romney. What have you noticed, how religion, his religion, is playing out?
Well, his religion is the same as mine.
Of course.
Let's just make that very clear.
I hope that's clear.
Yeah, want to do that. Well, I think it's elevated the LDS Church in a genre that they hadn't seen before. I think it's given the LDS Church an opportunity to explain who they are and what they stand for. The play on Broadway that's now down in California, I think the church has approached this in a very appropriate way by suggesting that if you're going to see the play, you ought to read the book. And I kind of like that soft side of what they're doing right now. And for me, I had a great, great opportunity to go back to the DNC. They invited me to come back and speak about my faith. And I felt like I was an old missionary again. I was carrying my triple combination. And for those who aren't LDS, that's the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Book of Mormon, and the Doctrine and Covenants. And it's called the triple combination. And I went back there, and I was invited to talk about what Mormons believe and what this Mormon believes as a Democrat. And I stood up, and I talked about Mitt Romney believes this, Scott Howell believes this. And I think that for me, that was a really eye-opening opportunity to share my faith in a non-judgmental way. I was on a panel with a Jewish rabbi, with an evangelical, with a Protestant, and with a Catholic nun, the one who's been going around in the bus advocating for the poor and needy, and myself. And we talked about what binds us together, and it was this unifying faith of respect for each other. And so for me, going back to the DNC and sharing my values of what makes me a Democrat, it truly is my faith and what we believe in our faith about care for the poor and the needy, about good government, about pulling our own bootstraps. And those things are they're burned deep within my soul.
Are Republicans reflective of those beliefs? I mean, Thomas Burr wrote a piece in this week's Salt Lake Tribune where he quotes Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid as saying that Mitt Romney is, quote, not the face of Mormonism. And he was agreeing with something that another LDS writer, Gregory Prince, had written, where he said that Romney has somehow sullied the faith. What do you think about that? This idea that somehow Republican values, they're not compassionate enough to sort of align with those sort of Christian values. You hear this from time to time. What do you make of it?
You know, the public debate on policy issues and faith are really starting to cross the line. And it's going to be elevated to that because Mitt is LDS. There's a scripture in the Doctrine and Covenants, section 139, verse 4, I believe it is, and it talks about, and I'll just summarize it. It says that no political party should have a one-up on another one just because of their leader who's of that faith. And I'm paraphrasing that, but that scripture in my mind really goes to the heart of this issue. Faith is important in our elected officials, but at the end of the day, What we have to do is the right thing for the believers, the non-believers, because this is America. And I think for me personally, the greatest day of my life was when I left the legislature and I had some LDS people come in and say, Scott, we've been here for 12 years. We had no idea you're LDS. That very afternoon, a Catholic family came in and said, Scott, we've been here for 8 years. We had no idea you're LDS. That made me feel, Doug, like I was doing my job. And that's really what we should be doing. Now, is it fair game when JFK was running and they brought up the Catholic question because they're all concerned the Pope would take over? Yeah, it's fair game to have conversation about that, but I don't see either candidate being subject to the whims of their leadership telling them what to do or what to not to do. And I served in the state Senate, and I'll tell you, I had many meetings with the first presidency. I had many meetings with general authorities, and they never once told me how to vote. They told me of their concerns, but I never had a dictate on how to vote.
What's your opinion of Harry Reid? If you win, he'll be the leader of your party, of your caucus there in the Senate?
Got some breaking news for you. It's time for a change.
You're not supporting Harry Reid?
I'm going to support who I believe should be the next leader of the United States Senate Democrats.
He's been accused of being brash, obstructionist. Do you tend to agree with that?
No. I think Harry's a nice guy. I've known him for many years. I just think it's time for a change. Same with my opponent. My opponent's been in 36 years. And I'll tell you what, Doug, it's time for a change in all the leadership. When you have 10% approval rating of our United States Congress, you know that citizens, this is like a football team. We got to fire the coach. The coach needs to be fired. Orrin Hatch needs to be retired and fired from what he's been doing back there. And I think on both sides of the aisle, Mitch McConnell, he stands up and he says, I'm going to make you a one-term president. Harry Reid stands up and says, I've heard rumors that Mitt Romney doesn't pay his taxes. This is all Fox News fodder at its finest. This is not what Americans expect. This is not what Americans want. And I'll tell you what, our senior senator is just as guilty as anybody. When he makes comments that he's made recently about President Obama and the things that he said, it is exactly what's broken with our United States Congress right now. I served for three terms, and I never once told Mike Leavitt I'd make you a one-term governor. We sat down and we worked together. Same with Norm Bangeter. I reached out across the aisle. The aisle reached out across to me. And that's what we expect from our elected officials that's not happening back now in Washington. And you know what? Orrin, he's not a bad guy. He's just been there 36 years. And I look out at this audience, and I'll bet you he's been in longer than most of these people have been alive. And that's just plain wrong.
Scott Howell is with us. He's the Democratic candidate for the Utah Senate seat. He's challenging six-term incumbent Orrin Hatch. Senator Hatch, we should mention, is going to be our guest October 15th as part of our Meet the Candidate series. It's a partnership with the University of Utah's Hinckley Institute of Politics. We should also say that KUER is airing Scott Howell's debate with the senator on Wednesday night. That's October 17th at 8 o'clock, immediately following Radio West of that day. It's part of our Vote Utah 2012 coverage in partnership with Utah's public broadcasting stations. So we need to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're back live at the Hinckley Institute of Politics at the University of Utah, the first in a series of conversations with some of the candidates running for office this year. We're beginning with Democrat Scott Howell, former minority leader of the state Senate. He's running against one of the most enduring political figures in the country, Republican Orrin Hatch, who's going for his seventh six-year term. You can join us if you have emails or comments. RadioWest@KUER.org is our address.
It's an interesting term, enduring.
You dispute it?
I would say the longevity is expired and it's time to move on.
Okay.
I think what we, and this is a great opportunity for me to just say what I believe about this. You know, age of service, I can't think of one founding father that would raise their hand today and say, let's give Orrin Hatch another 6 years. Let's make it 42. They never had that in the original thinking, and I can't find one person. And, you know, when I look at this, I was thinking about this the other night. I'm the only candidate who can work with both sides of the aisle. I have a relationship with Mitt Romney. I'm going back there as a Democrat, and I'm going to have a very serious conversation with the president about what I think is wrong with our country, and there's only 100 of us. I mean, this is a big, big deal, Doug. When you become a United States senator, you better have the clout and capability to go back there and make changes. And when I talk about clout and capability, I don't mean seniority. I don't mean someone who's been there contributing to the debt when I've been in the private sector creating jobs. So for me, I think it's time for a major refresh.
In a fundraising letter earlier this month, you said that Senator Hatch could die before his term was through. Which, of course, I guess you know by now, it's gotten a lot of attention. Among the people who took note was late-night talk show host Jimmy Fallon.
This isn't very nice, you guys. Utah Senate candidate Scott Howell is telling voters that his opponent, 78-year-old Orrin Hatch, should not be elected because he could die in office. Oh. But today, Howell called Hatch himself just to say, boo!
What are you making of the attention that this statement is getting? I mean, it doesn't seem like you've backed away from it. It seems like, in fact, you're doubling down on it. You've called for the senator to release 5 years of medical records as well.
Well, I think what's good for Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan ought to be good for Orrin Hatch and Scott Howell. And the day that we issued that challenge, age is an issue in this campaign. And the day that we issued...
But do you really mean he could die before his term is through? Did you really mean that?
Well, that's why we want to see the medical records, to make sure that we're all healthy. I mean, anybody...
So you don't regret it. You just don't regret that at all.
Age is an important part of this. When you think about my opponent could be 84 years old, the average life expectancy in the state of Utah, and we're healthy out here, is 78.6. And when we elect a United States senator, we elect that senator to represent us. And that's what we need to do. And constituents need to know about what's going to happen. And so, no, I think age is an issue in this election. And the greater issue here is his judgment. You know, he's bailed out Wall Street, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and all with taxpayers' money. He's voted to increase the debt ceiling 16 times. There's no fiscal responsibility in this individual. And why? Because he's been back there too long. Plain and simple.
Let me ask you about that debt ceiling limit. You've mentioned that he voted to raise it. Would you not have?
I would vote. Well, let's go look at my record. In the Utah State Legislature, I voted 9 times to support the budget. And the reason I did that is because we had a budget. I won't raise the debt ceiling or the debt until we have a budget in place. Now, people say, oh, how do you go about accomplishing it? You find like-mindedness people who have fiscal responsibility. At IBM...
But Senator, the full faith and credit of the economy of the United States was on the line. And that there are those who I think it could arguably said that a vote against the debt ceiling could have had a devastating effect on the reputation of this country's economy, and you still would have voted against it if there wasn't a budget in place. It's the same thing Republicans did, of course, saying that without a balanced budget amendment, which was not going to happen, the same could be said for a budget. So you still would have voted against the debt ceiling.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda. All those type of things. I know that my family has to live within their budget. I know that IBM has to live within their budget. And I know that we, if we would have taken this to the very brink, we would have found like-minded people. Now, hypothetical question, at the end of the day, Standard & Poor's downgrade us already. I mean, we're on our first step already. And I think part of the reason that they downgraded us is because we didn't have a budget. And what other than some of these countries that are in terrible, massive financial difficulties, don't have a budget? It's just that plain and simple.
You for a balanced budget amendment?
The amendment starts right here with who we elect. And an amendment will take years to get in place. We don't have years. I'm telling you right now, at the top of my list is the debt and the deficit. We don't have years to fix this country. We have to go in and surgically remove those things that are not producing what we as taxpayers demand, and we're all going to have to tighten our belt. You know, I unveiled a $2.7 trillion deficit reduction. My opponent, who's been there 36 years, has never, ever done that. I just believe that we need people of business like-minded who can work with a Governor Romney or a President Obama to go in there and make those hard decisions.
Can I talk? I wanted to get to that deficit reduction plan that you've unveiled. Includes a salary freeze on federal employees. I wanted to get to some of the other specifics because there are a couple of plans out there. There's the Simpson-Bowles plan that I'm sure you're aware of. Social Security reforms, such as increasing the retirement age. Are you for that? Do you support that or oppose that?
I think right now on Social Security, we have enough income to take care of where we are. And I think it's one of those issues that we have to carefully look at. Right now, I wouldn't raise it on those who are in line to get it. I think that we'll have to look at all the Social Security programs and make sure. You know, Doug,
what do you think about entitlements in general? Are you looking at them as on the table?
Let me go back to Social Security because I really want to answer that question for you. Our Social Security would have been fine if we would have kept the lockbox on that. And if we keep the lockbox on it today and don't raid that, we'll be okay. On entitlement reform, it has to happen. It has to happen. But we're not going to go in and leave the most vulnerable out on the street. We're not going to do that. But I think that that all has to be a part of it. We have to enhance small business access to credit. We got to cut taxes for small businesses. We've got to end the tax breaks for outsourcing jobs. My opponent voted just 2 weeks ago on the Bring Jobs Back to America Act. He voted against it. That would have brought our manufacturing jobs back to the U.S. I'll tell you what, that is the most irresponsible vote I have ever seen Senator Hatch make.
What about reducing farm subsidies? That's one of the recommendations of Bull Simpson.
Let me back up on Bull Simpson. I support what they do. I really do. I think that that is the best bipartisan work we can get. It cuts across all spectrums. And I believe that our farm subsidies, and again, Orrin Hatch voted against the farm bill, which would have brought drought relief to our farmers this year, but it also would have put in some very fiscal discipline things on programs that we have in place now.
Eliminating earmarks, you're for that.
I never made an earmark in my entire legislative. What a waste of accountability and taxpayer dollars.
I want to ask you what you thought about Paul Ryan's budget ideas. He is a deficit hawk like you. Some of the key recommendations, he wants to cut taxes for high-income earners and corporations. What do you think about that?
Don't agree with it. Corporations are not people. They have to pay their fair share. The difference between Paul and Ryan and Scott Howe budget is he slaughters. I go in and do a methodical review of where we are and what we need to do. And it's just too bludgeoning. It's too deep and it's too much. And it won't work.
Let me ask you, one of his recommendations, of course, as you know, is to repeal the president's healthcare reform law, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, it's often called. Would you have voted for that, first of all?
I would have.
You would have voted for it?
Yeah. I sit on the board of directors for Sutter Healthcare. So unlike my opponent, I have a deep understanding about healthcare. And I've known for some time that it's broken, and the quality's not there and the affordability. Now, what I would have also requested is that we find some Republicans to support this bill. It is obscene to me that a 2,000-page bill, and there's not one Republican that didn't have a good idea on this. There were lots of good ideas. And I'll give you some examples. Tort reform. That was a good one. Pharmaceutical drug importation, being able to buy in bulk on drugs. I really believe that ACA, and I look out in this audience, and I don't know how many of these kids are over 26, but I bet you not very many. ACA gives these kids the opportunity to be back on their parents' health care plan until they're age 26. That's a big deal when you look at the future of our country right here, where any one of these kids at any moment could have a major threatening situation, and they could go to the hospital and have a bill on their back for the rest of their lives that would cause them never to live the American dream. I also think about pre-existing conditions, the 220,000 senior citizens here in our state who are benefiting from the ACA. So for me, we've got to go in and make it better. My opponent says, go in, kill it, get rid of it. I say, go in, tweak it, make it better, and ensure that we take Republican ideas, and they had good ideas, and we implement them back into the ACA.
Here's some more Republican ideas, or ideas anyway, from Paul Ryan. Slash Medicaid, turn it into a block grant program. convert Medicare into a voucher program. Are you supportive of any of those?
No. Let me tell you about this voucher thing, which Orrin Hatch, my opponent, supports.
Right.
I've been to hundreds of senior citizens across Utah. The one thing, and this is what really gets to me as well, Doug, Medicare is not an entitlement. People have paid into Medicare. These are seniors who have paid in it their entire life, and citizens deserve what we have in there. Again,
But the point has been made that they put something in an average life, they put in something in the order of $150,000, take out something on the order of $350,000. How are you going to solve that discrepancy?
Well, I think there's a lot of ways to do it. The first is to go back in and do a thorough review of the providers of Medicare. There's so much waste and fraud that goes on in Medicare. And let me give you an example. And this is, again, where my opponent just has no clue about what technology can do. IBM has a software package that does deep data analytics. And we went into the state of North Carolina, installed this, and we found a provider who was billing over 300 patients a day. Now, I don't care how good a provider you are. You cannot see 300 patients a day. It just does not work. We estimate that there's billions of dollars of fraud that have happened to that. I think Medicare needs reform, but I think it's reform on making sure that the performance of that and auditing it is exactly what we do in order to keep sustainability.
Let me ask you about taxes.
I pay them.
You pay your taxes.
Yeah, I pay a lot.
Well, the question,
and
of course,
I'm mad at Mitt because I don't know how he ended up paying less than I do because I don't make nearly what he makes.
Well, that is the question, of course, whether or not people in that higher income strata should be paying more in taxes. What's your opinion of that?
I think everybody should pay their fair share. I support the Buffett Amendment. I really do. I think that it makes a lot of sense.
Explain what that is.
Well, that's essentially that your tax rate based back upon your securities and a lot of stock that you have that is issued out to you as an executive has a different tax rate because they say it's been taxed once or twice before. And essentially what the Buffett Amendment says is that those taxes would be higher and it would be equal to what you should be paying on that. So I support that 100%. And I can tell you I've had that experience with options at my own company at the level I was at. So 73,000 pages of tax code. It is absolutely terrible that our senator, who's been there 36 years, has never gotten back in and made that a less burden on our citizens, hasn't gone back in and done away with the loopholes. I don't know how big oil companies get away without paying their fair share of taxes. I do know the answer to that one. It's because they use legitimate loopholes that are in the tax code. And when you have that, that's what it is. But we cannot let PACs and lobbyists dictate what's going to happen to us in America. 98% of my opponent's funding comes from PACs. And why? Because they're the ones who are getting the tax breaks right now.
So your position on this, because you hear this question from time to time, that Republicans worry that by raising the taxes of these higher income people that you're going to somehow tamper down economic growth because you're putting this burden on so-called job creators. Where are you on that question?
It sure ain't working now. And we've had those Bush tax cuts in place for a long time.
So you support raising taxes for people of higher incomes?
Yeah. What I support is fairness in the tax code and to ensure that everybody pays their fair code. And the example of this is where we are in unemployment right now in America. We are a little bit less here in Utah, but I will tell you that we have to ensure that we have fairness in our tax code.
Let me just give the opportunity to those in the audience. Does anyone have a question? Raise your hand and we'll get a microphone to you. If you do, just raise your hand and we'll get to you. I want to ask you about education. Of course, this is the issue that first got you into politics as a state senator.
What a good memory, Doug.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed. You were only 19 back then.
The question is, I guess, you've talked about wanting to reform or change No Child Left Behind. You talked about Race to the Top, that program that you like. But this question comes up. I mean, you actually ran for the school board. And the question is, are you sure this is the right job for you? Why not run for the legislature again? You can have a far bigger difference on education than the impact you might have in a federal office, although that's maybe arguable. But are you sure this is the position for you if you want to make a difference in education?
It's the perfect position for me. I've almost felt like my entire life I've been preparing for this. And when you take life experiences from when you grow up, from playing football at Skyline High School to going at Dixie College and graduating from this great institution here, working for IBM for 34 years, understanding how budgets work, being the father of four boys and one wife, I need to point that out, here in the state of Utah. Doug, I think I can have more impact on education back in the United States Senate than anywhere else right now. And I am such an advocate, starting with pre-K and going all the way through lifelong learning skills. Truly, the more knowledge we get in this very life, and I'll turn back to LDS doctrine, the glory of God is intelligence. And I just believe that every single human being should have the opportunity to get a quality education and exemplify that, to be the next Mark Zuckerberg, to be the next Steve Jobs, to be able to change the face of our country. And I invest in education because sometimes when I look out at these kids, I think there's going to be one young man or young woman that's actually going to find the cure to cancer. And so I support the Huntsman Cancer Center up here. And I support Prosperity 2020. It's an education initiative by the Salt Lake Chamber. I've already met with them. I'm going to meet with them again. And all the money that we put in No Child Left Behind, that left all the children behind, we are going to invest back in the classroom and have technology. Doug, just real quick, I look at this cell phone. I'll bet you every individual in here has a smartphone. And then I think about the way we're delivering education in K through 12. It's still on a blackboard. We have got to get technology into the classroom. I believe that our schools should have iPads. They should have the technology that they can stay motivated and they can learn and they can be accelerate in this great American process called education, public education.
That's Scott Howell, Democratic candidate for the Utah Senate seat. He's challenging six-term incumbent Orrin Hatch. Senator Hatch is going to be our guest on October 15th. It's part of our 2012 Meet the Candidate series, and it's partnership with the University of Utah's Hinckley Institute of Politics. We're in the caucus room at the Hinckley Institute of Politics, and we need to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are at the Hinckley Institute of Politics on the campus at the University of Utah. It's the first in a series of conversations with some of the candidates running for office this year. We have begun the series with Democrat Scott Howell, the former minority leader of the state Senate. He's running against Orrin Hatch, who's going for his seventh six-year term. So I wanted to ask you, you took on Orrin Hatch, of course, in 2000, did well in Salt Lake County, took like 70% of the vote, but he had like 30% of the vote statewide. And you got to do better than that if you're running statewide. What do you figure has changed since 2000? Do your prospects look any better, do you think?
You know, that I consider that 2000 race as the warm-up match. It's kind of like when Utah played Utah State and then they came back for the big game against BYU. They won that. And what I think has changed a lot is the demographics of our state. I really believe that we've had an influx of a new thinking, new leadership, and clearly to me, when we go out to, we've been to every county there is. We've met with elected officials, and the one thing we keep hearing is, Scott, I'm going to vote for you. I'm a Republican. And then I go, great. And then they lean in and they say, Orrin has been there too long. They say that to me. And I think there is Hatch fatigue all across this state. And, you know, for me personally, Orrin, you had a chance to leave on a high note. You had the opportunity to go do whatever you wanted. And for him to run again, in my mind, is just shameful. It almost mocks democracy. For the guy who said, I will serve three terms and I'll be out. And he went after Frank Moss And he said, what do you call a senator who's been there more than two terms? You call him home. And he did say, if they're not doing a good job, I mean, they tack that on there. I'm saying right now, Orrin is not doing a good job in representing Utahns. He's representing Washington. He's been there too long. It's time to refresh our whole system.
You ran for three terms of the state Senate. You promised that's all you would do. Can you make a similar promise if you win the federal race?
Today here, I want every student and every citizen to write in their diary tonight, Scott Howell will serve two terms, period. And that is a fact of life, and I believe that that is just why at my IBM career, I could have probably gone on for another maybe 4 or 5 years, but I chose not to because everybody has to retire. Everybody recognizes when their shelf life expires. And for me, Orrin Hatch is time to move on. And I just, you know, he's done some good things. I want to thank him. But now there's new technology. There's new thinking. There's innovation. And what I bring to the table is this new creativity and working in the private sector for 34 years, balancing budgets, creating jobs. And, you know, we're here at the best university in our whole state. And I'm thinking about what I would do differently. You ask about education. Orrin voted to do away with Pell Grants. He voted to do away with the deductibility of the first-year students who parents can write that tuition off. I will vote to maintain those important aspects so all of our kids can have an opportunity. The Huntsman Center is a crown jewel here. I remember when I first voted for that as a state senator. That, in my mind, is a crown jewel of this state and of this country and of this world to solve cancer. And to think that we would cut back funding on that, that's just obscene in today's world.
I think we do have a question here from the audience. Yes, please.
My name's Anna Drysdale. I'm a student at the U. I'm studying English Lit. And lots of students here are concerned about the future of higher education. And you've talked about revolutionizing education in Utah. And you've said that you want to give as many people access to higher education as possible. And then you just said that you will vote to continue the Pell Grant opportunity and provide that. What is your plan exactly, or what course of action would you take in office to ensure that the highest number of students could get a higher education?
Thank you.
Accessibility has to be prominent in everything that we do. We can't deny, whether it's at SLIC, whether it's at SUSC or one of the colleges, we have to have accessibility. And just because a parent or an individual is born in a circumstances where their parents can't afford education, that's why Pell Grants are so important. That's why accessibility to funding is so critical. And those, in my mind, are investments in the future. I don't see investing in an oil company, not having them pay taxes, versus a student who can change the future of our community and of our state. So I am a big advocate that we will continue to make sure that we have accessibility to quality education. And that is number one and preeminent in everything that I do and everything that I say.
Another question here. Back, yes.
I'm Steve Cruz from Utah Foundation, and one of the issues that we've found is on the mind of Utah voters is air quality and the environment. And in your desire to be elected to the U.S. Senate, that is one of the areas where the federal government has a lot of interplay with state government. What are your thoughts? There's a lot of talk about regulation and its burden on the economy, and this is one of the areas where that concept really hits the ground. What are your thoughts on what the EPA and the state ought to be doing about air quality in our valleys?
Well, this ties right into my economic development plan, which clearly at the heart and soul of it is clean water and clean air. We cannot continue to function as a society, let alone a valley here, if we don't have clean air and clean water. What company would want to move to Utah if our air continued to go down in the standards that we've had over the past few winters? We have to have a solution and a collaborative solution with the EPA, with manufacturing and business to make sure that we can come up with a plan that keeps our air clean and our water pure. That is at the heart and soul of every single economic decision that's out there. And when you look at the foundation, they also talked about education. I mean, that was another one of their top issues, that Utahns want to have clean air, clean water, and when their kids go out to recess, they want to make sure that they can be out to recess and not kept back in the classroom.
But, so, but how do you balance that with this need for energy development to become energy independent, as a lot of people are talking about? How do you balance those values, the value of clean air, clean water, with, you know, development of energy? How are you thinking about that balance?
Homeland security is renewable energy. Let me say that another way. Renewable energy is homeland security. What I've advocated from day one of jumping into this race, we need to capitalize on solar, on wind, on geothermal. And let me give you a great example. Garbett Homes, right here, a local growing up, homegrown company. Bryson graduated here from the University of Utah. He now has homes that take advantage of solar roofs where their average monthly electrical bill is $13.40 because he's done sustainable building. And these are homes that sell anywhere from the high one, from 190 up to about 220. They're about 2,000 square foot homes. We have to take advantage of that technology in order to bring our manufacturing back to the U.S. To make sure that we have sustainability in the future. We have to have policies like that and incent developers and incent homeowners to convert to those plentiful technologies that we have.
But what do you do in the meantime for companies that are trying to develop energy opportunities, oil, shale, those other kinds of things? They're trying to drill on public land, looking for leases, those kinds of things. What do you say to them?
I just got off a radio interview this morning with a station out of Vernal, and we had this very conversation. And we have to make sure that we have clean air and clean water and sustainability of the tar sands. And when we can prove that they keep our lands public and that they have sustainability and they can move forward, we should invest in them. Now, I'm in the technology business, and our technology has really revolutionized the way we go with things. I think also nuclear has to be on the program to be able to look at it and make sure that it won't affect our harm, that we have a sustainable plan to do away with the waste. But it has to be there because we've got to wean ourselves off foreign oil. We have to.
There's a question that Steve Cruz mentioned his Utah Foundation project, Utah Priorities. He mentioned environmental issues, which is number 7 on that top 10 issues. Right under that, partisan politics. People are worried about partisan politics. And I'm wondering what your experience in the state legislature as a member of the minority party taught you about what could be perceived as, it was talked about often, as gridlock in Washington.
My experience was really quite simple. Get along and work together. There's a time and a place for politics. There's a time and a place for disagreeing on policy. And at the end of the day, you have to reach across the aisle, and you have to be willing to work with each other. Mike Leavitt would call me and say, "Hey, Scott, we have got a huge challenge here. Come down and meet with me, and let's talk about how we can both agree to win on this one." You know, we had the first bill that is called the Digitalized Signature Bill, which made it legal to transmit documents over the internet. Now, you guys are all, you were back in third grade and fourth grade when this happened, but that was a big deal. You know, I think about some of the key legislation that we passed up there, and it was working together. I passed one of the very first bills on in-stream flow. Our water laws hadn't been changed since 1857. A little unknown fact about Utah, the first recorded murder over in Utah was over water. And I passed a bill. It took me 2 or 3 years. It's called in-stream flow, that kept water coming, and we'd never dewater a stream or river again. Now, I was called green. I was called environmentalist. I was called one of those people. But you know what? I worked it through, and we got it passed in the Senate and the House and signed by the governor.
You want to go back to that race I mentioned earlier after you had been gerrymandered out of your seat. We've got about 2 minutes left here, and I'm interested, what kind of strategy did you adopt to – you took on – who was it, the 20-year incumbent? It was Finlinson, was it not?
Senator Finlinson.
Senator Finlinson.
Who, by the way, is a great guy.
But he had been there a long time. I guess there's some parallels here to this race against Senator Orrin Hatch. What will it take for you to actually win? What's the strategy you're taking on?
Well, it starts with prayer. I mean, that's the most important thing every morning. No, really our strategy is quite simple. It's to point out the vita or the resume of the two candidates. Scott Howell, 34 years at the IBM Corporation, creating jobs, 58 years old, had public policy experience by being the minority leader of the state of Utah. My opponent, 78 years old, been there 36 years, has eaten out of the public trough for the last 36 years, has no idea about what's going on in our lives as we transform our lives every day. Many of us have gone through a transformation where we've had to cut back, where we've had to change things. And when you look at that, my strategy is simple. That's what we're going to do, is attack these issues head on. And at the end of the day, you have to decide if you want a guy who's been back in Washington for 36 years to running the finances of the United States of America, or you want someone who understands how to balance a budget and cannot print money when we get in trouble. We have to have new leadership and be fiscally responsible, just what we've done in the state legislature.
Has this given you a taste for politics again, this particular race? Let's say it doesn't work out for you. You think you'll stay in there?
Who knows about the future and what it offers? I will tell you that it's thrilling to be back in the public arena. There are so many great people, and we've been to every county. We've been to Chambers. We've been to Kiwanis Club. And the reception we get is, oh, you're a Democrat? Well, you have to leave this county at least by 7 o'clock. I'm just kidding. The reception we get is, it's nice to see a businessman that can compliment Mitt Romney if he gets elected. It's nice to see a businessman that can go back there as a Democrat and work with both sides of the aisle. And if it's President Obama or Governor Romney, I'll reach out my hand from day one, and we will work together to end the gridlock in Washington, D.C.
Scott Howell, he is running, of course, against six-term incumbent Orrin Hatch. Scott Howell is the Democrat, and thank you very much for the time. Thanks,
Doug, thank you very much. Thanks to the audience. And look, I just want to say in closing.
You don't have time to say anything in closing.
Okay.
Let me just say Radio
I just
West.
To thank you.
Thanks.
That's it.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to the Hinckley Institute of Politics, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.